Di Stoddart in from the library, who's been away for a while. So, Di, how was your trip away?
Busy library, as it is after a long weekend. One day closed and you'd think we'd been closed for a week. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books coming back in off the street, so to speak.
Right.
And you spend your whole life shelving.
Yeah, I can imagine. So have you got lots of new stuff in?
I have no idea because I haven't been there. But, there's new stuff coming in every day, more or less. I'm sure there has been some new stuff. But I was busy flying around the world in 35 days, so a little bit disconnected.
So tell us about what you were reading while you were away.
Yeah. Well, book club was on as soon as I got back because we meet on the second Wednesday of the month. So I thought, right, I have to, and want to, of course, read the book club book, which was... gone out of my head.
Oh, okay.
The Glass Room by Simon Moore. And so I didn't want to take the book club book from our library because last time I did that, I lost it and had to pay a huge lost book fee.
Oh, no, I thought that didn't happen to librarians.
Yeah.
I thought you guys were just like, you just had this knack of never, ever losing a book,
yeah.
ever.
Anyway, so last time I think I left it on a cafe table somewhere. So when I was in Oregon at my sister's 50th, which is the whole impetus for the trip, I went to pals.com, and it's like Amazon, but it's in Portland, Oregon, and it's a whole block, and it's three or four stories high, full of books, wonderfully organised. And so I thought, I'm bound to find a $10 job, at pals.com. So I did, so I bought my copy there in very good order, $10. And off I went reading it in America and England, and I'd finished it by the time I got to Greece. And we discussed it, last Wednesday night. And for most of us, it's 7.5, 8, 9 out of 10, which is a pretty good standard of, mark. We don't always mark a book, but we did this time. It's very well written. I just loved every moment of it, and it was one of those books that made me energetically, I really got into the energy and the essence of the book, because this is all about a house in Czechoslovakia, just as Hitler's kind of racking up his schemes. And this very wealthy family has asked a Viennese architect to design them this house. But it's going to be, it's the house of the future, so it's not of the times at all. And we think that this house does actually exist in Czechoslovakia and Prague, we think. And so it's called the Glass Room because it's this ultra, ultra modern house, which is just all glass with this particular big glass room. And the whole front of it's just got one huge sheet of glass, and it just goes, and it has a hydraulic system, and it just goes, and it all goes down into the basement. So this, and then the whole front of the house opens. So you get this wonderful picture and essence of transparency, reflection. And inside the house, they have this huge black onyx wall as well, and the reflections from that. And so surround, that's the whole core of the book for me, was about reflection. And so all the relationships, the husband and wife, the husband's other and wife's other relationships, she's got gay relationships, he's got a mistress, even the chauffeur has another agenda, which is not that transparent, the lack of transparency about what's actually happening in Germany and what's coming through to Czechoslovakia. It's incredibly...
So the house is kind of a metaphor for what's going on and what's not visible and visible. Very clever, very cleverly done. Has this person written other books? Do you know? Do you remember who wrote it?
It's Simon Moore, Mawer.
Okay.
And I'm sure he's written other stuff. I can't answer that question.
Okay.
But, go to the catalogue and you'll find out.
And so this is a relatively recent book?
A couple of years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And it's available at the library?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So... Yeah, loved it. And of course, I've been recommending it, I've been back 4 days. I've already got about 4 people reading it. It's just gorgeous.
Oh,
and so you also get a sense of just filtering ever so subtly through the back of the story is what's going on in Germany, the taking over of Czechoslovakia. This incredibly wealthy family with this amazing house has had to leave their house, of course, because he's Jewish, the husband. And so they have to do the escape, basically, train journey, and they end up living in America. So he's pulled together. The story has, for me too, had a very strong sense of coming together, pulling in, the house being the central thing, and then all the people to do with the house get fractured because of the war, and they're disappearing off to different places. And then at the very end, Moya brings little bits and pieces back together.
Oh, okay. Oh, don't tell it. People might get upset if you tell us. No, don't tell us.
No, I won't tell you anymore. I won't tell you. But, you know, highly recommended. So do, if you haven't read The Glass Room by Simon Moore, you do so.
Excellent.
And then, of course, and then what was I going to read from Greece onwards? Because I still had rest of Greece.
The drama and then of being on holiday without a good book.
And then I had Vietnam. And so when you're in these these kind of cheap hotels, there's always a little bookcase of books that people have left behind.
And I love just trawling through and seeing what there is. Because there are often things you'd never really choose to read.
Right.
But there's often little
gems
hidden away.
So what was there was The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. And, of course, I've been meaning to read that for, you know, quite a long time. It's non-fiction, of course. He wrote, did he write Blink? But he's also written, you know, he's quite well respected.
He's an ethnographer. Sorry, I don't know. Explain a bit briefly.
And there's another one that I can't, another title of his that lots of people are, I mean, this is one
he's
of the books.
It's a bit like Jared Diamond, isn't
everybody,
he? Sort of talks about the future and.
It's really about. Kind of the subtleness of ideas, and did he write Blink? I can't remember. But the Tipping Point was about what is it that actually tips something over from being just ordinary to being epidemic proportions? And it's quite a lot of the unexpected that psychologically, you know, some of the things that you just think are kind of quite fundamental, practical things that might tip something into an epidemic. But it's the little things that create that, and it could be just one person. So he talks about a person being a connector, being a maven, a word I hadn't really heard before, but a maven is somebody that has a whole lot of information because they're the research kind of people. So if you want to know something, you're going to find a maven type of person. And so somebody could be good at something, but they might not be a connector. And if you're not a connector, then something isn't going to go from just being ordinary to being something really amazing. So he talked about epidemics, whether it was sickness, whether it was a new shoe fad. He talked about hush puppies. They just about died out in the 70s, I think. And it was just this one or two little incidences that then turned hush puppies back into an in shoe to wear again, and it became an epidemic, and sales shot through the roof. And so he looked at all sorts of, you know, how to get graffiti off a tube line, you know, and the techniques of the management making it just these doing these little subtle things that then completely changed the statistics of an event.
Yeah. So what did he suggest?
Well, it was really clever
because they would get rid of the problem. Or, I mean, did he have something a bit more subtle
than that? It was really
that?
Interesting because people would hop on the line, not paying. This is in New York, really had fallen apart. And it wasn't a safe place to be. And people would jump the turnstiles and they would be the graffiti everywhere. And so he just did the new guy just did the smallest thing. He made sure that every train was spotless. So he didn't worry about the money. He didn't worry about other elements of management. His number one priority was to clean the train. So he would never have a graffiti train mixed in a train line with clean ones. They would roll into he had processes set up where there would be a train cleaning place and that would be absolutely constant. As soon as something was graffitied, bang, it would be in there getting cleaned, and that was the highest priority. And they'd have these kids, you know, graffitiing a train, so it'd be it takes 3 nights. The first night they do an outline. No, the first night they paint it white. The second night they do an outline. The third night they colour it in. And so as soon as it was done,
that must take quite some logistical effort on their part to keep spotting the same trains. That's quite interesting.
And then they would
highly employable young people.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And the clean, and then they just as soon as it was done, bang, it would be de-graffitied. Mm. And it would be completely disheartening, of course, for the kids or the young adults doing it. And very, very, very quickly, that whole dynamic changed.
Oh, that's interesting,
and it just completely changed the energy of the underground. And then, yeah, it was mm. it's quite, I kind of skip read it a bit and I haven't finished it, but it's been one of those books, when it came out, it was incredibly popular and you had to wait and queue. And so that was a little opportunity for me to get a taste of the tipping point.
So quick comment on your trip then. What was the highlight of your trip?
It was so varied. You know, America with all its excessiveness and the aged and ancientness of England and Greece in a different way as well. We had the gorgeous, typical Greek fishing village experiences because we stayed with a friend. That would be my choice to go back to. And Hanoi, which was, you know, absolutely full on and packed with millions and millions and millions of motorbikes and scooters. And so, like, you know, we often would say to people, you know, Vietnam's got 87 million people and 30 million or more motorbikes. It is absolutely full on, and it seemingly appears to be no road rules, and you can go around and around about the wrong way. You can cross it, you can cross in front of anybody you like, you can walk in front of anybody you like, because, you know, we were pedestrians. And it just, and I give the analogy of a beehive, which seemingly, you know, it looks chaotic when you see it, but actually it just works a treat. We didn't see, we had thousands, tens of thousands probably, of people passing in front of our eyes in the 10 days we were there, and not a frown, not a angry voice, not an impatient anything. And it was, and to think of the history of Vietnam and all those people that have come in over the centuries trying to overtake it, including America being the last one, it's just gorgeous to watch these Vietnamese people who have totally forgiven all of what their injustices and just live really simply and really happily with each other and with all of us tourists that pile in there.
Well, it sounds like a really interesting place to have gone to.
Anyway.
Right, well, Di, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks,
Sharon. Lovely. Bye. Tori Amos in China.